Coach, he scores!
Once again to the Leafs Nation podcast. We're going to do a bit of a shorter version this time around as Danny Gray is unable to join us. But we do have here Eric T from Broad Street Hockey. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So, there's one big thing you and I have to talk about. And of course, that is the Shen for James Van Riemsdyk deal. Your initial reaction to this deal was what?
I wasn't entirely thrilled. I don't know a whole lot about Shen except what I hear from you guys, but he sounds to me like somebody who has potential to be a top four guy but isn't necessarily there yet. And Van Riemsdyk, I think, is already a top six forward and has potential to grow from there. And so I feel like that was a little bit of a steep price to pay.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm happy about the trade, and I suppose that's probably bad news for you.
Yep.
I think that James Van Riemsdyk is already ready to contribute in the role that he was projected to land, right? It's like you said, he's already a top six forward, and Shen, I don't even know if I see him as a top four D-man anymore. Another Leafs blogger by the name of Mike Forbes, he said recently that... the Leafs have this long history of rushing prospects, and Luke Richardson was actually a comparison he made. Another player who was brought up very young by the Leafs and went on to have a very long career, but it was as a depth defenseman. And I'm beginning to wonder at this point if that's, Shen's ultimate... I guess I don't want to say career ceiling. He'll probably have a few years of top four assignments, but... long term, I guess I see Shen as a, bottom pairing defender. Now, as far as being rushed, I think that he's brought up from junior right away at 18, and probably his greatest downfall is his skating. So I'm not sure if he was or not, because ultimately I don't know what an extra year in junior or the AHL would have done for his skating, but. Certainly, decision-making in his own end is an issue. He's not a great outlet pass guy. My other main criticism of him would be, for a guy who lacks a bit of foot speed, his positional awareness isn't phenomenal. On the flip side, he has, I would say, well, for one thing, his offensive output has gently... increased each year since he's been in the league, so that's a plus. And it's true that he has led the team in hits ever since he joined the team as a rookie, with the exception of one year when Phaneuf came over. But even that year for Phaneuf was, of course, split between the Flames and the Leafs, so really, Shen was the hits leader once again. So, I see upside there. He's still young, and defensemen, at least in my view, I think they tend to round into form a little bit later than forwards. But, JVR is really, I don't know, his point totals, or at least his rate of scoring, is sort of stagnated. Is there anything specifically about his play, any kinds of observations that you would have Leaf fans know about?
Yeah, so I'll walk through the perspective on Riemsdyk. He came into the league as a number two overall pick. It was, unfortunately, a one-player draft, but... still, that number two label put some huge expectations on him for the Philly fans. He came out of college. He never played major juniors. He never played a long season. And he didn't come into the league a dominant player by any means. It took till he was 20 before he ended up in the NHL. And he started off with a pretty mild 35-point season. And at that point already, there were people turning on him, The Philly fans were calling him a bust at that point already.
a little impatient, I guess.
And a big part of it is he's a big guy and he doesn't lay explosive hits and throw his body around. And Philly fans in general can get really frustrated with that. That's a big part of what happened with Jeff Carter, too, is they see a big guy and they want to see big hits.
Mm.
And if they don't see big hits, then they call him soft. and so Van Riemsdyk got that soft label early on. In his second year, he grew a little bit. His goals increased. His point total increased. And, you know, you could see some growth. In the second half of the year, he was on a line with Carter and Giroux, and it was clearly the best line on the team. And I'm not going to say he was the driving force. He was playing with really good players.
Yeah.
But he was looking very solid. He was driving the net. He was creating plays. And that line, they went into the playoffs, and Carter got hurt, and it became Giroux and Van Riemsdyk and whoever. And Van Riemsdyk was really the one carrying the play in the playoffs. He scored 7 goals in 11 games, and I don't have scoring chance numbers, but he was the one driving the play. He was, again and again, creating opportunities, pushing the puck forwards, and just driving the net in a really impressive way.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, that 11-game span turned everybody's perception around immediately. And now he was on the cusp of superstardom, and he got this really big 6-year, $25 million extension, which for someone who is a restricted free agent for the next 5 years is actually quite a lot of money. And the fans were really excited about that, that, you know, we've got this future star locked up. And then we come into the next year, and he played through a hip injury all year and suffered. He had a concussion, he had a broken foot, he had all kinds of stuff. He played through it. He still increased his scoring rate, his point rate. What he really increased sharply was his shot rate. So his shots on goal per 60 went up by over 20%. And that's a really encouraging thing. As you probably know, shooting percentages fluctuate quite a bit from year to year, but shot totals are more consistent. It's more of a leading indicator of growth.
Right.
So his shooting percentage dropped from 12 to 9 this year. But I think, honestly, we don't yet know what his shooting percentage will be in the long run. He just hasn't been in the league long enough. But seeing the shot rate go up is really encouraging. And it's not like it was more bad shots. You can lay the shot maps on top of each other, and the locations are pretty similar. He was just getting off more shots. And he was doing it on a lesser line, to be honest. And so I think that speaks really positively to him in terms of individual finishing play. But it wasn't a 70-point season, and people were fixated on that 11-game stretch where he dominated play, and they were really disappointed that all we got was a guy scoring at about a 50-point pace as a 22-year-old. and we're back to the bust label, and anything we can get for him is great. And, you know, all offseason, everybody was proposing JVR and Bobrovsky for anyone they could think of. And, you know, it's frustrating sometimes that
I can totally understand that.
Yeah, I look at him and I see him growing year over year. He hasn't yet shown that he's ever going to be a 70-point player, but just the scoring rate he had this year, it was over a half a point a game and with only 15 minutes of ice time. And if you project it out over 82 games and 20 minutes of ice time, it's up around 28 goals and 60 points. And that's in a year where his shooting percentage was down.
So, all right.
I honestly think he's already producing like a first-line player, but just getting second-line minutes on the Flyers, and that all he needs to become a real first-line player is first-line ice time.
Yeah, you know, I was already sort of prorating his production, given a larger number of games, you know, hoping that he's going to be healthy, but I hadn't yet figured in the difference in ice time. I mean, I'd like to see him get some first power play unit minutes here in Toronto, but you know, we'll have to see how Joffrey Leupold is going into this season, because, of course, he was white hot last year on a high shooting percentage and a sort of a spree with Phil Kessel. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets more or less power play time in Toronto than he did in Philly, because he still got substantial time at 5-on-4 with you guys.
Well, everyone in Philadelphia did.
Yeah,
there were a lot of penalty. There was a lot of special teams time to go around in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm actually not sure what to make of him on the power play yet. They last year when Pronger got hurt, not in 11-12, in 10-11.
Right.
They put Van Riemsdyk at the point a lot, and that was, you know, it went okay. It was nothing special, but he wasn't. it wasn't making use of his ability to drive the net. And I'm not sure it's the best long-term role for him, but the Flyers were really toying with having him out there. He actually, they had one of those silly skills competitions just for fun, and he actually won the hardest shot competition.
Really? Do you recall what his speed was?
I don't, but that was not long before he ended up at the point, and we all wondered if there was some relation there.
Probably, yeah. Well, that's actually interesting. I mean, the Leafs at this point have a few defensemen that can really throw bombs from the point. Phaneuf, Lyles, Franson as well. So I don't know if I envision him seeing much time on the point on the power play there. Brian Burke in a recent interview said that although James Van Riemsdyk doesn't use his body to lay a lot of hits, he definitely uses it well in the offensive zone to get where he wants to go. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He loves to body up on a guy and hold the puck away from them and sort of edge around the guy as he drives towards the net. That's by far his favorite move, and he's been pretty effective with it and developing it. I think that's exactly right. He's not a big hitter, but he is a big-bodied player, and you know, he makes use of that. That's
all right.
One of his skills.
All right. I have to say that I find that encouraging to hear. I mean, we haven't really had someone who's good at that since Matt Sundin. that will be welcome. Now, I mean, you know, if Flyers fans are looking for big hits, they've got the right guy. You know, Shen has absolutely laid some devastating hits. Probably his most famous is one on Malkin, where he just about drove him into the bench a couple years ago. That's definitely worth a YouTube. So, I guess I don't want to be all doom and gloom on Shen, you know, because, like I say, he still has time to round into this defensive defenseman form. Now, one other note I wanted to touch on. Well, you mentioned that you felt that Van Riemsdyk may have prematurely gotten that larger contract. And I got to say, for a 40-point player, which at this point is really all he's absolutely proven himself to be, is a bit steep. But you're saying that you definitely envision him continuing a rate of production with better minutes, or with more minutes, rather, that would see him earn those dollars?
Yeah, there's no question. If he were an open market, unrestricted free agent, he would get easily that much money and probably more. So if you're acquiring his contract, it's not something you're going to be frustrated with. As a team that owned his rights for the next 5 years, you know, restricted free agents get paid about 40% less than unrestricted free agents.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't feel like, you know, when you have a guy locked up for the next 5 years, there's no real need to extend him at that point. And so from my perspective, the reason you would sign that deal is if you get a discount where, you know, the player's getting security by signing a long-term deal, and in return he gives you a slightly lower rate than he would get year over year. I don't think they got that discount at all. I think they slightly overpaid relative to what restricted free agents typically get.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't a horrible signing, but it was, they took on the risk of a long-term deal and they slightly overpaid, and it felt unnecessary when they had him locked up. But when you're trading for the guy, none of that matters. You know, at this point, the question isn't, could the Flyers have signed him for less? The question is, do you expect $4.25 million of production from him? And I think the answer from that's definitely yes.
Okay, well, what about Luke Shen's deal? It saves you guys a bit of cash, and Philly is right up against the cap there. So, I mean, it's good news, but it's not much of a break. What do you think of that contract?
Well, I don't know. The Flyers have 6 or 7 defensemen making more than $3 million each now, depending on who you count.
Yeah.
And that seems tough to sustain. But on the other hand, the defense needed an upgrade. So I'm happy to acquire defensemen, and I hope he will work out. The contract won't bother me at all if he develops into the player that they need him to be. And if he doesn't, then the trade is a failure regardless of what the contract is. So it's sort of a secondary concern for me. It's not clear to me how they're going to balance everything out with, you know, they have four or five defensemen now who are all in that 27 or under and making $3 to $5 million. And that's a lot of guys to find ice time and cap space for.
Well, I mean, you know, last year the Flyers were among the highest scoring teams in the league. Now, you know, losing Van Riemsdyk and losing Jágr probably, I suppose last year it looked as though defense was a number one sort of need, right? Assuming that goaltending was not an issue, which, well, of course, that's another story. But I suppose throwing money at what was perceived to be the team's biggest weakness probably wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think last year they were undermined by their goaltending a lot more than their defense. Their shots against rate was in the top 10 in the league, and they ended up something like 17th in goals against because their save percentage was really low. And, you know, you look down the list player by player. Okay, Pronger, we don't know about. Tiiminen is declining for sure, but still very, very good.
Yeah.
I'm very high on Carl and Coburn. I like both of them a lot. Mazaros is great in that leading the third pairing kind of role. He's a borderline top four guy, but you could pair him with Sean O'Donnell or Andreas Lilja and get an effective third pairing out of him. So that... He can drag around a bad partner and still do well.
What do you think of Carl? He's an RFA this year. Am I right?
He's an unrestricted free agent.
Unrestricted free. Uh-oh. All right. Yeah. So you worried about that hole at all?
I am. And now that JVR is gone, Carl is clearly number one in the scapegoat list among Philly fans.
Seriously.
Yeah. The story is rumors. You know, what the mainstream media is reporting is that their understanding is that a deal with Carl is in place but can't be announced until July 1st for tagging reasons. And I am hoping that's true. But, you know, you see them trade for another young defenseman and you count seven guys at $3 million or more, and it makes me nervous they're going to let him go. Carl's he's a very solid offensive defenseman. He doesn't lay the big hits. He commits the occasional turnover, and so the fans hate him. But you know, he commits those turnovers because he's the one with the puck on his stick, because he's the puck-moving guy. And
right.
It's not that his turnovers are an enormous rate. It's that when you have a guy who plays a lot of minutes and always has the puck, he's going to have some turnovers.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that after having looked into turnovers and giveaways and takeaways a little bit myself, I think they're probably one of, if not the most unreliable stat that the NHL tracks. So I tend to put very little stock in those numbers.
Yeah, I agree with that. Those numbers didn't make him look all that bad, to be honest. But what people have in their head is everybody can remember one or two plays where he had a bad turnover that led to a goal. And
sure.
That's all it takes to decide he's a bum. So that can be frustrating. But we can't have a team that is all Luke Shens and Andre Mazaros and Nicholas Grossmans and, you know,
no
some
kidding.
People who can move. So Tiiminen's getting older and is not going to be that guy forever. And right now, Carl is the premium mobile defenseman on the team.
You know, on a brighter side for you, at least you won't have to hear any Braden Schenn to Toronto rumors anymore.
Yeah. Honestly, the biggest upside for me is that now we won't be moving JVR for Nash.
I guess there's that too, eh? He's safe there.
Yep.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for joining me.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Have a good day.
You too.
Okay. Bye.